Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations. Online at shrm.org.
A clear path for open skies.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Today, Britain is indicating it will not block the landmark pact with the U.S. to open transatlantic flights to greater competition. That was a word today from British diplomats to its European Union partners. However, the U.K. will try to get a delay in implementing the pact at London's Heathrow Airport. The Federal Reserve begins its 2 days of meetings today. Analysts don't expect a change in interest rates as the central bank weighs signs of a slowdown. The announcement will be made when the meeting ends tomorrow. Powered by mergers and falling oil prices, the bulls roared on Wall Street yesterday. The Dow soared 115 points to 12,226. The Nasdaq jumped 21 points to 2,394. The S&P climbed 15 points as at 1,402. Most Asian markets closed up this morning. In Tokyo, the Nikkei rose 153 points. This morning, the price of oil is hovering just under $57 a barrel. President Bush is meeting with automakers today at assembly plants in the Midwest. This visit comes after a meeting back in November. Last year, Detroit's top brass came to the White House to talk about the state of the auto industry. Some of their concerns, how much it's costing them to provide health care and fuel emission standards. Lisa Roth reports.
President Bush will visit two plants in the Kansas City area, one GM, one Ford. Both make hybrid vehicles. Fitting, since the president plans to talk about improving fuel efficiency. Burnham Securities analyst David Healy says the real issue is the cost.
Everyone pays lip service to fuel economy and reducing carbon dioxide emissions, but everybody wants someone else to pay for it.
President Bush wants to cut gas consumption by 20% in the next decade. Healy says the big three know how to make more efficient cars. The hard part is convincing American consumers to buy them. Meanwhile, the carmakers will be back in Washington again soon, reportedly to show off new models that use alternative energy sources. In New York, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
You may still call it your cell phone, but the mobile industry has taken to calling it the Swiss Army knife of the 21st century. All the latest mobile gear and services will be on display this week at a major conference. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
The CTIA Wireless Conference is the U.S. showcase for what's become a $500 billion global industry with billions of mobile subscribers. Jim Harvey is with Motricity, a mobile content management company. He says hot services on display at this year's conference include video tones, that's a ringtone with video, and phone calls with video capabilities.
As the networks improve, as the devices have more storage and more memory, you're going to see more and more cool video services and things like that come to the phone. So there's going to be a lot of talk around video.
Harvey says the mobile phone has morphed into a multifaceted lifestyle device that can do everything from play your favorite movies to pay your bills. Keynote speakers at CTIA include Viacom CEO George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Most of us have had our oops moments. A computer technician in Alaska had a doozy. He accidentally wiped out a disk drive that contained information on a fund for the state worth $38 billion. While reformatting the disk drive during a routine maintenance check, he accidentally reformatted the backup drive as well, and then, well, oops, all the data disappeared. Long story short, after a tedious process involving dozens of people working overtime and weekends, the problem finally corrected. And amazingly, everyone felt bad about what happened, and the technician wasn't even blamed.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com. And by Medtronic, offering information to learn about sudden cardiac arrest and available life-saving therapies at Medtronic.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
A lot of Americans will get something in the mail tomorrow, their Social Security checks. Recipients get the checks on Wednesday, except for the first Wednesday of the month. For some, it can be a bittersweet portrait of what a life's worth is worth. Commentator Russell Frank explains.
The earnings record the Social Security Administration sent me the other day shows just what a poor performer I've been since I joined the workforce as a 16-year-old hardware store clerk. The job paid me $120 for the year. Minimum wage in 1970 was less than $2 an hour. My fellow clerks constructed hash pipes out of plumbing parts and stole entire toolkits one piece at a time the way Johnny Cash assembled his Cadillac. But a few months into year two, Murray the manager fired me. I was a poor key maker and a worse shelf paper cutter. Earnings for the year, less than $500. Was I distraught about getting canned from my first job? Are you kidding? I'd quadrupled my income in a year. At that rate, I'd be middle class by the age of 20 and a billionaire at 30. Alas, my year three income from a summer of assembling ice buckets and lazy Susans sagged below $400. I spent July and August of year four testing batches of cake mix for contamination. I singed the hair off my arms and nearly set my afro on fire. My earnings surged to $1,300. In year five, I traded my lab coat for a camp counselor's whistle. This was a major step down income-wise. The summer of year six, I learned I was even worse at tennis court construction than I was at keys, shelf paper, and food science. After a month of wallowing in tennis court glop, I grabbed what was left of my meager wages and went camping. In the end, it took me 15 years to break 20 grand. I could beat myself up for making less money in my entire working life than Alex Rodriguez will get per game this season. But I prefer to read my earnings record as a friendly reminder that money isn't everything. If it were, I'd have to kill myself.
Russell Frank teaches journalism at Pennsylvania State University. Finally, in the late 1970s, rumors began circulating that the logo for Procter & Gamble was a symbol of Satanism. PG&E responded by filing several lawsuits, including one in 1995 against four Amway distributors, accused of spreading that rumor to thousands of customers through voicemail. After a 12-year drawn-out legal battle, a jury hearing the case awarded PG&E over $19 million in civil damages, supporting the company's claim that its reputation was damaged. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.